Well, we're going to come back in a moment as we talk miracles with Sid Roth on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Sid Roth, host of It's Supernatural, featuring documented cases of paranormal miracles. He's an investigative reporter, gives a background on his investigative case studies, providing some documentation of these miracles. Now, before Sid was investigating miraculous stories, he was an account executive for Merrill Lynch, but things kind of went south for him personally after becoming plagued with what appeared to be occultist influences attacking him, possibly possessing him for a period of time. We'll get into all this with him. Eventually, he freed himself from these influences, started his new life. He has investigated more miracles than just about any living person. And here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Sid, how are you?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm really blessed, but this is the time of morning. I'm normally not talking on the phone, but for you, I'm doing it.
Great. I look forward to So you got to tell me, what happened when things were going downhill for you, and how'd you pull yourself back up?
Well, and let me tell you just in a couple of minutes, set the stage. I happen to be Jewish. Both my parents are Jewish. Came from the Orthodox expression of Judaism. And when I was very young, my parents were involved in athletics. They were professional poker players, a different type of athletics. I was home alone way before the movie came out, and about 6 years of age. And a thought crossed my mind, and I'm sure it's crossed the mind of everyone listening to us right now. What happens when you die? Now, in Judaism, it's the chayim. It's to life. We don't. We Jews don't think about death. We think about life. So, as a child, I never heard anyone speak about it. Jews do believe in life after death. However, I never heard anyone speak about it. So, I just tried to imagine as a child what it would be like if I didn't exist. And it was such an objectionable thought, I blocked it from my mind. And I didn't think about it till many years later. When I was 29, I had a early midlife crisis. Okay. I left my job at Merrill Lynch. I left my wife. Oh, and I went searching for happiness.
Everything went topsy-turvy for you.
Everything. I mean, yeah, you know, this isn't supposed to happen. I mean, I was trained by the movies and by television. You're supposed to have a happy ending. And everything
That's
was
right.
exploding in my life. So I took a meditation course, and I opened myself up to what they called a counselor. And this counselor actually, if you get to know me, you'll find out I'm a very pragmatic, a very logical type of person by nature. A friend of mine took a course, and he was able to know things that he never knew before. And I thought, you know, with my stockbroker background, if I could know things before they happened, I could become a millionaire. And, of course, television taught me if I was a millionaire, I'd be happy. And that was before I had gray hair. I happen to be 72 years of age right now. As you and I both know, the most important things in life, money can't buy.
That is so true.
But, I mean, money can't help you if you have an inoperable tumor of the brain and you're dying. Money can't help you if your wife is run off with your business partner. Money can't help you if your kids are out in the streets with drugs. But I didn't know that. And so I figured if I took this meditation course, I knew things that would happen in the future. Then I could become wealthy. That was my logic speaking to me. And I could be happy. And I remember when I was in college, I wrote a song. It was called There Must Be Something More. And the words went like this. There must be something more because I work, eat, sleep, and that's the way it goes. I work, eat, sleep, and that's the way it goes. There must be something more. So I took this course, and I found out I invited what they called was a counselor inside of me who would answer my questions, and the thing worked. I won't take the time to go into it. I wrote a book on the subject called There Must Be Something More. In any event, as a result of this, I found out, and remember I told you I'm very logical, that when I heard this voice telling me something, it was a true thing. And I got very excited. I thought, oh, I can now become a millionaire. I can now be happy. And however, I got more than I bargained for. This power started really growing inside of me to the point where when I started thinking things, they started happening. For example, I would say, I want to go into business for myself. And a man came into my office that I just had met once and said, Sid, if you ever want to go into business for yourself, we have an extra office, extra secretary, extra telephone. You can come in and use it free. And I thought, boy, this power is terrific. I didn't realize it. This guy happened to be a born-again Christian, and he had a power working inside of him, too. And his power told him to invite me into this office. Then he started showing me the Bible. And, of course, I'm Jewish. He's going to show me the Bible. What's this Christian know about the Old Testament? And he started pointing out and saying there were different powers in the earth. And I was tapped into an evil power, and he turned to Deuteronomy, the 18th chapter. And sure enough, God called what I was doing in the Torah an abomination. But I have to tell you, I wasn't even sure the Torah was from God, so what difference did it make? And I got a hold of a book. I don't know if you've ever heard about it. It's from a New York Times writer. The book was called The Jew, the Bible, and the Supernatural by McCandless Phillips.
I've not read it. I heard about it, but I've never read it.
It had a wrinkle that no Christian ever told me. I guess they weren't interested in it. And this was the wrinkle. It said that we Jews were under a covenant or a contract with God. And whether we knew it or not, we had more responsibility. So when we would go into powers that were not of God, we would suffer a greater consequence than, say, a Gentile. And by the way, most people don't know this. The word Gentile in the Hebrew means someone other than someone born in Israel, someone from another nation. So the Jews, there was were greater responsibility for. And this book proceeded to list one famous Jew after another that did the same things I was doing and lost their life. And the one that really got me, because I was really into show business and writing songs and things like that, the one that really got me was the Jewish manager of a rock group called the Beatles, and his name was Brian Epstein. And Brian had everything I wanted, but he went to the Himalayas with the Beatles, and at that time, and he got into some forbidden areas, all the Beatles did, including Brian Epstein. But at that time, when I read the book, only one died, the Jew, Brian Epstein. Then I got into a realm called astral projection, and I got in over my head. I started leaving. I don't know, George, if you're familiar with astral projection.
I sure am. I had one when I was 11 years old, Sid.
Okay.
Not able to duplicate it again, but
okay, I know that you understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. I did not understand it. I broke into the realm as an adult, and I have to tell you, George, it scared me. And then someone compounded it by saying, once I broke into this realm, I would start doing it unintentionally every time I would go to sleep. So I was afraid to go to sleep at night. And at this point, a friend of mine who had taken this meditation course and invited this counselor into his head that was far superior than I was, I asked questions. And I said, what do you see me doing 5 years from today? And he looked at me. He said, Sid, this has never happened in my life. But my counselor won't answer that question and is cursing me right now. And I have to tell you, I read this book, The Jew, the Bible is Supernatural. It said all these Jews, famous Jews, lost their life for doing what I was doing. I'm afraid my spirit's going to leave my body. I had a script for Rod Serling of Twilight Zone like he never imagined. And I was afraid to go to sleep at night. Now, I had seen Dracula movies. And what you do when you're dealing with evil, I was convinced this was evil. If you ever read the book or saw the movie The Exorcist, that was me. I mean, I knew there was some evil inside of me. I wanted this thing out. That's all. I wasn't looking for God. I wasn't looking for anything. Just get this evil thing out of me. I was so scared. I don't know if you can relate to this, George, but I'm a positive thinker. I was in sales. I read every book I could on positive thinking. And you know what, George? Positive thinking works great till your first crisis. Then it doesn't work so great.
Well, this was ripping you up then inside, wasn't it?
Yes. As I said, I saw these movies, and what you do is you hold up a big silver cross, and Dracula runs away from you. Now, I'm teasing it away, but I'm serious. This is the way I was thinking. I was a bissel meshuggah, you know, and the Yiddish, George, it means a little crazy. And so I hold this big silver, I was going to get a silver cross, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it because I'm Jewish. We Jewish people don't have crosses. So I came up with an idea. I went to a Jewish bookstore, and I got a mezuzah, a silver mezuzah. Do you know what a mezuzah is?
What is that? No, I have no idea.
Okay. Well, on the doorpost of Jewish homes, you may have seen it. It's like a little box. And it actually, in the Torah, it says to put scripture on your doorpost. So every time you go in, you thank God you were safe, and your family's safe. And every time you go out, you kiss it, and you kiss your finger and touch it, and thank God for your safety as you leave. Religious Jews have this on their doorpost, and it's in the Torah. So I went out. I bought a beautiful silver mezuzah. And I put it around my neck, and I figured, well, I've got that base covered. I'd been given a Bible at that point by this man that had offered me the free office. I put the Bible under my pillow, and I reached a point that I'm kind of treating it light now, but trust me, George, I was at my breaking point. Remember the kid that said, what happens when you die? And the thought was so objectionable that I stopped thinking about it till that point. Well, death looked better than life to me.
Wow, Sid.
I mean, everyone, I would hope no one would reach the point I reached, but I imagine a number of people in the audience right now.
Were you sharing that with other people at the time, or were you keeping it all within yourself?
Well, here's the problem. If I went to my wife, my wife, by the way, was raised Southern Baptist, got to college, became, she likes to say, I became an agnostic. She didn't become an atheist, just in case there was a God. And then when we got married, I insisted she convert to Orthodox Judaism. So you might say she was a Southern Baptist agnostic Orthodox Jew. We were separated at the time, so I called Joyce on the phone, and I didn't tell her what I was going through because I knew she couldn't relate. I said, Joyce, pray for me. Now, she was shocked. I would never ask my wife to pray for me. You know, I might ask her for something, but not to pray for me. I hung up the telephone. In the past, when I got into scrapes, I had the world's best mother, Jewish mother on the planet. My mom would bail me out of every mess I got.
Sounds like mine. Better that way. Old country women were that way.
Well, I'll tell you something. My mother and my father would give their life for me. I was a blessed man. I couldn't tell them about it. My mother would And Father, they'd send me to the rabbi. What, rabbi? I'm hearing voices. There's something evil inside of me. I want it out. I mean, the rabbi would say, you're bismashugah, you're a little crazy, Sid, and send me to a psychiatrist. Now, George, do you know the number one profession for suicides in the United States? Psychiatrists.
Psychiatrists, doctors.
So, yeah. So anyway, in answer to your question, I couldn't go anywhere. And these Christian friends that offered me the free office, they said, Sid, read Isaiah, the 53rd chapter in your Bible. And so I read this Isaiah 53, and I was really kind of shocked because it described Jesus. And it was written 800 years before Jesus even came to earth. I had never been told this. I never saw this before. And so I only had one place. I didn't have a human I could reach out to. So I have this mezuzah around my neck, the silver mezuzah, this Bible under my pillow, and I prayed a desperate prayer that I would have never done in a million years because I'm Jewish. I prayed a prayer, Jesus help, and I went to bed, and I flat didn't care whether I woke up alive or not because life was just too difficult.
Gosh, that bad.
But the next morning, George, now that what I'm describing to you happened over 40 years ago, but the next morning when I woke up, there was something in my room. It was so tangible. It's like going from, 100 degrees heat into air conditioning. It was a tangible substance in every square inch of my bedroom, and it's like I could reach my hand up, and I could feel it. And the best way I can describe this, George, is it was liquid love. I mean, I have personally, I've never been an alcoholic. I've never even been drunk. I've been high, but I've never been drunk. I've never been an alcoholic. I've never had a drug in my life outside of when I went in for surgery. So I can't tell you what those experiences are like, but I can tell you what the experience was like that I had. I can tell you that it was the purest love I'd ever experienced in my life. I went to bed not caring whether I lived or died. And when I woke up, I felt more alive than I had ever felt in my life. I felt so much peace, George, that if you had offered me $1 million to worry, I'd laugh at you and I'd say, I'll take this liquid love over $1 million without even blinking an eye. It was the most wonderful experience I ever had in my life. And that thing that was inside of me that was causing me not to even want to live could not take the pressure of this pure love. This was what the Bible calls the love of God. It was the, I just can't tell you how wonderful it was. And then I heard the audible voice of God. And this is what he said to me. He actually quoted from Malachi. Now, you would think as an Orthodox Jew, I would know Malachi, which is in the Old Testament. But no, I knew the prayer book. I didn't know the prophets. And this is what Malachi says. He says, he's speaking on behalf of God. He says, I hate divorce. And so that's what I heard from God. And I was on the verge. I was separated from my wife for a year and my daughter, and I was on the verge of divorce. And he said, return to your wife and daughter.
Hold on for a second right there, Sid. We're going to take this quick break, and we'll come right back and get into your stories of miracles. Beyond Belief, that's our television program, and we've got some great guests there for you. John St. Augustine on near-death experiences on our Friday program. Simply go to this website, take a look at it, 10 days free, beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast, Sid Roth with us, of course. One of his books, Heaven is Beyond Our Wildest Expectations. Sid, so you wake up, you have this epiphany, your life is changing at this point, I assume, right?
Well, here's the bottom line. I went to bed not caring whether I lived or died. I woke up. When I woke up, all that evil that was in me, it was gone. And I knew that. And I knew it had to do with this prayer I prayed to God in the name of the Jewish Messiah, Jesus. And I knew I was to return to my wife and daughter. Well, here's what happened. Next year, Joyce and I, that's my original wife, we never got divorced. We were separated for a year. We'll celebrate our 50th wedding anniversary.
Whoa.
God restored my mind.
How about that?
God restored. And let me tell you one of the most amazing things. When I speak, I can't tell you when it happens. I can describe things that happen, but I hear from God now. I know the difference from hearing from evil and hearing from God, world of difference. I hear from God now, and when I hear from God, I speak what I hear, and when I speak what I hear, miracles happen. For instance, I recently had I do lectures on the supernatural,
okay.
And when I speak about just what I've been talking to you about, the most amazing, like I was speaking 2 weeks ago, I'll give you an example, but I have to explain the progression of this. I think it might interest some of the people. I would be speaking about my experience. Now, this is some 40 years ago, and all of a sudden, I would hear a word, neck, let's make that up. I'm making it up right now. And I would speak that word out. And I would then say, everyone with a neck problem, come forward. And I would then touch them in the name of Jesus. And every one of them, the pain would go, no matter how many years it was
there.
It's
amazing.
Then it started growing. Rather than put my hand on people and pray in the name of Jesus, I would just speak the words and people would be healed in their seat. So I thought, I wonder what would happen if I had a meeting of Jewish people who, like myself, the one thing we Jews know is, the thing that makes us a Jew is we don't believe in Jesus. That's literally what we're told not to do. And so I thought, what would happen if I advertised in the newspaper, lecture on the supernatural, Sid Roth, who has spent the last 40 years studying the paranormal, the supernatural, is mm-hmm. coming to Boca Raton, Florida, one night only. Sid happens to be a Israeli-American, which I happen to be. I have dual citizenship. And he's coming one night only to Boca Raton. Well, we had more people than we had seats. I believe there were about 450 people showed up at the meeting. And as I spoke, I started speaking words as God spoke them to me, and 20, 30 hands go up, and they say, I've just been healed in my seat. And
while you were doing that?
While I was doing that, for instance. But then it started getting better than that. I then didn't even have to say words. But just by talking, do you remember the presence I told you that came into my bedroom that worst night of my life that was liquid love? That liquid love would start going on people, and they would be healed. So I was speaking a couple of weeks ago, and I said, after I finished, if you've been healed, I want you to come up and tell me what happened. I mean, I don't pray for them. I don't touch them or anything. And so this guy walks up and he says, the metal in my ankle has become bone. I said, well, wait, how do you know that? We don't have an X-ray machine here. We're not an airport. How do you know this? And he said, because, I had pain in my ankle and I put my hand on my ankle and I could feel the metal. I can't feel it now. So I'm very excited about it. And I have to tell you, George, I have a radio show like you. I'm on about 60 stations, and I interview people that have had miracles. And I have a television show like you. and it's called It's Supernatural. And I interview people that have had miracles.
That's on TBN, right?
It's on a number of stations. TBN is one of them. We're actually all over the world. We're on 5 days a week in Russian, in the Soviet Union. We're in the Farsi language in Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran. And the greatest miracles are happening, people. You want me to tell you a couple of people I've interviewed that are outrageous miracles?
Absolutely. And let me ask you this, too. Do you consider yourself a healer, or does it just happen?
I have to tell you, as a Jew, I have such a healthy reverence for God and respect for God. I believe there's only one healer in the world, and that's God. And I believe that, therefore, when someone asks me that question, I say, absolutely not. I can't heal anyone. But when God shows up when I'm speaking, people get healed. That's my answer to your question.
Perfect. Now give us some examples and some miracles.
Okay. I'm going to tell you one that may not be the greatest, but it's my favorite. Okay?
All right.
Her name is Jan Aldridge. Jan was born with a birth defect. She had what's known as an elongated tongue. It was almost triple the size of a normal tongue. Beautiful girl, but when she opened her mouth, her whole tongue fell out, and she looked awful. She couldn't talk. She couldn't eat properly. It was an awful thing. And, I told my wife this story, and my wife had a little difficulty believing this. She couldn't believe someone would have a tongue that long. And one day, she was watching the National Geographic Channel, and they talked about people that had this condition. So she came to me, and she apologized. But anyway,
I think Miley Cyrus has that problem.
Well, actually, that I don't know, but I won't get funny right now. I'll leave that one alone.
All
but anyway, George, the only solution she had was surgery. But although she would look beautiful, she wouldn't have her tongue. She would actually roll her tongue up to keep it in her mouth. Otherwise, it would be hanging out.
Oh, my God.
And she would look hideous. So the only solution was they could do surgery, but she'd never be able to speak again. But the consequence of not speaking again wasn't as bad as the consequence of looking as badly as she looked. And so she was going to have the surgery. Just before the surgery, an evangelist prayed for her. And this is what she told me on my interview. She said, "My tongue was on fire, and I could feel it shrinking. And my first thought was, it's going to become too small." And in a matter of minutes, her tongue became normal. She went home that night. It was probably about 1 or 2 in the morning when she got in. And she woke her mother up by saying the word, "Mama." Her mother had never, by the way, someone was just healed as I was speaking. I'm going to get right back to that story, but I have to be obedient. There are people that are listening right now on the radio, and or even if you listen by the iPod, if you listen just on the archives of this show in the future, I'm telling you there are people right now who it backs. I don't care what's wrong with your back. If you will, if you drive in a car, pull off to the side of the road. But I want you to bend over and test it and see if the pain is gone. And there's something going on with ears right now. Someone was ringing in the ears. The ringing has stopped. In the Messiah's name, and Yeshua, and I like to use his Hebrew name, in Yeshua's name. There are people, so anyway, going back to Jan Aldridge,
the lady with the huge tongue.
She said, "Mama." And by the way, just when I said that, the first time, that's when God started telling me people were being healed. When she said, "Mama," her mother had never heard her speak perfectly before. And she was like 18 at the time now. She was born that way. And just before the surgery, God performed that miracle. And today, this beautiful woman is an evangelist using that mouth, which if she had gone to the surgery, she would have never been able to speak again.
Isn't that amazing?
But you know what? What's even more amazing is I've written a number of books, and one of the books you mentioned, Heaven is Beyond Your Wildest Expectations. There's another one that is really mind-blowing. And by the way, when I'm talking about a healing, there's total documentation of this. I mean, anyone can say anything, of course. Let me take Dr. Gary Wood. He's in that book, Heaven is Beyond Your Wildest Expectations. Dr. Wood was involved in a horrible auto accident and died. He was dead on arrival when the ambulance came. Among other things that were messed up, his vocal cord was totally crushed. And he had an out-of-body experience. He went to heaven. I'll tell you something interesting I learned from Gary. When someone goes to heaven, they're usually greeted by one person. And the one person that greets them is someone they knew in their life that also made it to heaven.
Right. Almost as a greeter, I guess. Right?
Yeah. And so the guy that greeted him had to be his best friend. Who had died previously. And when Gary was told his time, it wasn't his time to leave Earth, and he went back, and he's laying in the hospital room and dead, and all of a sudden, he gets up, he sits up, the nurse walks in, and he's speaking. And the woman, the nurse knows, among other things, he has no vocal cord. You cannot speak without a vocal cord. It was totally crushed. They did the sonogram on it, and they knew there was no vocal cord. And the x-rays. And by the way, I've seen pictures of these x-rays, and there is no vocal cord. This man cannot speak. But here's the amazing miracle, George, that God did. This guy then had x-rays, and it shows his vocal cord is still crushed. The man cannot, based on science, speak. But he speaks.
But he
not only speaks, he's a singer. He sings.
With crushed vocal cords.
With a crushed vocal cord.
How do you explain that, Sid? My gosh.
I explained it as a miracle is something that science cannot explain. I explain it as a miracle. I'll tell you what, I've been interviewing people since 1977 on miracles. And when I read the New Testament and I read the miracles that Jesus did, I have no doubt of them. I have personally seen every miracle that Jesus did. And as a matter of fact, I'm about ready to interview someone actually in a couple of days. Did you ever hear of a revival that happened in America in the early 1900s? It was called the Azusa Street Revival.
I have not. No, tell me about it.
Okay, this was an amazing thing. There was a one-eyed black man. And this man started a little congregation in California, and it was on Azusa Street. That's why they called it the Azusa Street Revival. His name was William Seymour. This is a historical fact. They saw miracles that very few people on the planet had ever seen. I mean, Pete, they literally saw someone walk in with an amputated leg, and they saw the leg grow out.
No way.
Well, this was now we're talking about a little over 100 years ago this occurred. So therefore, everyone involved in it is dead now, except for one thing. There was a young man that was a teenager that got to know a number of the elderly people from the Azusa Street Revival, and he was instructed from God that his assignment was to hear these stories and talk about them at a certain date. He was not allowed to talk about these miracles until just recently, and the miracles are so outrageous. But the reason I told you that story is to tell you this. This man, William Seymour, that had the greatest miracles since Jesus, and it happened right in California.
And these were documented, right?
Oh, totally documented. In fact, most Christian historians know of this great revival. But this fellow, William Seymour, I'll tell you another interesting, to me anyway, it's interesting. He would have a service, and he would put a big cardboard box over his head. Why did he do this? He wanted to block out everything going on, and he would then not take the box off until he heard from God. And when he heard from God, he would take the box off, and he would begin speaking. And when he would speak, every miracle you can imagine started happening. Well, the minute the revival lasted, it didn't last long time. It lasted 3.5 years. And you know when it ended, George? It's a sad thing. He became too sophisticated for the box. He took it off, and he didn't have it on. That's when the revival stopped.
He screwed up.
He did. But anyway, this fellow that I'm going to be interviewing, his job is to tell people about the revival, but William Seymour had a prophecy, a prediction, and he said 100 years from today, there will be another chance for planet Earth to see the reality of the living God. There will be a presence of God will come upon the United States that they will see the same miracles we have seen and even greater. But the thing that'll be different, it won't be one or two special people. It'll be everyone that really knows Jesus and knows the Bible is going to be able to operate in these gifts. And guess what? We are now 100 years out. Excuse me. So therefore,
we're right in the middle of it.
I expect any minute now there will be people saying, "Come out to my church if you don't have eyeballs in your head." And then that's what would happen. People without eyeballs, the eyeballs would materialize. People where their eyes were just milky white and they were blind, they'd be able to see. And beautiful eyes were formed. In fact, go back to this this book of mine, Heaven is Beyond Your Wildest.
Yeah, hold on, Sid. We're already at the top of the hour. We've got more to come on Coast to Coast AM.